Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Pfizer Second Quarter Results Analyst Teleconference. We have with us today Mr. Ajaz Tobakkowala, Managing Director, and Mr. S. Sridhar, Finance Director. As a reminder, all participants' lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need any assistance during this teleconference, you may press star and zero on your touch-tone telephone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. S. Sridhar. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. Hey, hello everyone. Welcome to the Quarter Two results, and thanks for your time. I'll spend the next few minutes talking to you about the industry and our performance, post which Jaz and I will take any question and answers what you'll have. As you all know, the current year, we are seeing a significant slowdown in the industry, and the last few months have been very impactful. And even the next few months as we go into the transition, we predict it's going to be a little challenging to sustain the certainty over the pricing policy and some of the trade challenges which some of the companies are facing are getting resolved. In addition to that, even within the industry, we do find a general slowdown coming in from new introductions are slowing down. We really noticed the trend on new productions has come down significantly over the last few years. The hospital sector is witnessing a slower value growth coming in there. So these are the factors which are in a way impacting the industry as a whole. Most key areas like anti-infective, pain, vitamins, gynec are virtually in single digits as of now. The more disturbing trend is actually the September results of IMS, which has actually reflected a 1.8% growth for the industry, which is probably one of the lowest ever. Could be a combination of all the factors, and also probably to some extent some economy as it's slowing down, maybe it's having some kind of impact on the industry as a whole. In terms of pricing policy, if you really analyze the industry performance of 9% for September MAT, the NLEM products have grown only at around 3%, and the non-NLEM at around 11%, and that's why you're getting about 9% growth there. And NLEM implementation is riddled with implementation challenges, still in terms of interpretation challenges, and top of it with the trade challenges which some of us are facing, and a slowdown in purchases. We'll talk about it more as part of the question and answers. Moving on to our performance, we have reported a growth of 5% for the pharmaceutical sector. And if you really look at the total growth of 9%, which has got a sale of some products to animal health company Zoetis, as we continue to give them some support for some period of time. So hence you see a 9% top line growth there. And just a pure pharma was about 5%. The branded generics business which launched, yes, it has been a little slower. It's not doing as well as we expected. As we told you the last few quarters, we are recasting our aspirations in terms of what BBOs we should focus on, what we should drop off, and that is really, really giving us some kind of a better performance in the last quarter or so, and here is better benefit going forward. Amlogard as a product has come under price control, so that's a little slow in terms of its performance, but we do see a good volume coming in for Amlogard. Bicosyl's performance has been slow, as given that this quarter has been seeing a post-scheme effect. We had some few spiky scheme periods of Bicosyl's, and that has really, really getted to some few quarterly mismatches in terms of performance. We're looking at a process where, rather than giving some peak in terms of our schemes, we'll do a lot more standard schemes for Bicosyl's that will even up our growth going forward. This quarter also saw implementation of new pricing policy. We have implemented all the prices as mandated by the government in this quarter. And that has really gone on well for us. It has been fairly smooth implementation. The profit for the quarter before exceptionals has seen a good gain. Predominantly it's coming out of three or four reasons. One, as we told you in the last quarter and prior, we have gone through some kind of a rationalization in terms of our field force as we set up ourselves into a new therapeutic model focused from April onwards. we reassessed our required field force, and that has benefit has come in this quarter. The interest income is up significantly given the higher cash balance we have. We also have income coming in from the Zoetis company for the temporary transitional support what we give to animal health. That income has come. Our expenses are slightly on the lower side in this quarter, both in terms of advertising expenses and secondly, the cross charges between Pfizer and Wyeth has also given us some kind of a boost there. So if we really look at it on a standalone basis, if I were to knock off the animal health impact of it, remove the service income from Wyeth from my numbers, remove the transition support agreement, a pure pharma business, you would see a 5% top line growth with about a 34% PBT growth for the quarter. And 25% without interest and 34% with interest, which is in the back of the lower expenses which is coming in there. In terms of our key product performance, we seem to have a good performance in Corex. We had a good performance in most of our key products, Magnex, Dolonex, Minipress, all have done really well. Those are some of the products, if you remember, even including Gelucil. As you remember, these are the products which are really struggling the whole of last year. Post our formation of our trade team in April, we are seeing some joy coming back to our key products, and that was our whole strategy behind it. Because though it fits into this strategy here, it will take probably one more quarter or two more quarters to stabilize our scheme periods. And once that stabilizes, the comparative growth will also be gone. So therefore, our whole strategy of a TA model and setting up the trade team is actually bringing a joy to the top four or five products, which was really, really lacking the whole of last year. Like I said, most of the key products have done really, really well in this quarter. Only challenge has been in terms of Bicosyls, which is purely a facing and a trade issue. Amlogard is a little low because of comes under pricing policy, and the branded generics are lower. If I knock off the Bicosyls and the branded generics impact, our company would have grown at 9%. So for 5%, you could actually read as 9% without Bicosyls and with branded generics, which I think is a good progress from what we have. In terms of other operating income, for the quarter, it's about 22 crores, going on about 31 crores. That's basically coming in basically on account of the service income we get from on account of Wyeth and from other Pfizer affiliates and also from the Zoetis on account of transition support. That is what is actually driving the other operating income. In terms of a total expenditure, there is no major change to a total expenditure pattern in a way. Material cost, though it sees at 38.1%, it's actually because of the animal health sale what we have. If I knock that off, it's basically 35.3 versus 35.2, which is fairly comparable to the same period last year. So there are no major changes to our material cost assumptions here. My staff cost has the benefit of lower field force costs coming in there. However, to some extent, is offset by retirement benefits valuation and some field force addition we've had for Wyeth. So on the staff cost line, though you don't see a specific reduction, but it's getting compensated by some increases and decreases on account of that. In terms of other expenses, from a 71 crore to 73 crore, there are again some pluses and minuses. My rent has slightly gone up because the corporate office rent. We have had lower spends. My freight costs have increased because of the high diesel prices, which because of it has moved on that. My processing charges increased because my volumes increased for some other key products. My cost of conversion increases for some other products that's coming in there. And otherwise, there are no major significant expenses coming in, other expenses there. In terms of other income, the only change we have is on the bank interest line. We had about 840 crores same period last year. It's about 1400 crores, 1500 crores as of this quarter, and that is what is predominantly driving the other income. So in terms of profit before tax, if I do a bridge for you before exceptionals, we had a 78 crores last year, 106 crores this year. It's predominantly coming in because of the lower expenses, like I said, on one hand, interest income on the second, and income from Zoetis Animal Health Company. So that is what is really moving up my profit before tax growth there. So to summarize it differently, if I were to look at it around 6 months, the two quarters, we have had our pharmaceutical business is bouncing back compared to the same period last year. So that has given us some amount of money also, given the volume increases, lower spend base. So that has also given us some equal amount of money. At the same time, the interest income and the service income has also given us equal. So it's more or less, it has been a fair play between business income and service income in the first 6 months there. There are no major changes to our balance sheet. It remains more or less a similar healthy state there, and no major changes. Inventories are slightly lower, and receivables are in control. So that's all I have. A very snapshot of our results. Jazz and I are happy to take on any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Participants, we will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Anyone who has a question at this time, you may press star and one. We have the first question from the line of Ranjit Kapadia from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Congratulations for a good set of numbers. My question relates to how many products have increased the price. You have increased the price during this quarter. And what is the impact of Amlogard price decline?
Our price increase is nominal, Ranjit. We are not taking any conscious call to take a price increase post-NLEM consciously. So we have taken a regular price increase. What we do in the regular course of business is no exceptional price increase coming in this quarter. So most of the business is coming in because of the volume growth which is there. With regard to Amlogard, the price drop is ranging from about 38 to 48% depending on two SKUs what we have.
And how much will be the impact in terms of amount for Amlogard, approximately?
It ranges from about 12 to 18 crores depending on the what volumes you achieve this year.
Okay. And this solumidrol is also under price control, which has gone under price control. So what is the impact on that?
That's not a Pfizer product, Ranjit.
Achha.
Pfizer limited product.
Okay. So the impact will not be absorbed by Pfizer.
It is not a Pfizer limited product.
Okay. Okay. Thank you and wish you all the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Girish Bakru from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Just color on branded generics, if you could throw much light. If in terms of percentage of sales, what would be the percentage right now and where do you see going it in 2-3 years?
Like I said, currently we are doing for the 6 month basis, we have done about 20 to 25 crores is the range we have done. Okay, we as we recast the strategy going forward, we do feel that we branded generics play a key part in our strategy. There's no doubt about it. However, rather than focusing on around 50 or 60 products, we may focus on about, say, top 10 products, which will still give us a good high level of revenue. Rather than coming from 50, it gets disposed to far more focused 10 products there. And though we would still have a clause over the original projection, but to a large extent, we should be significantly reduce the gap there. And more so, most of the focus of branded generics now, you know, is coming in the therapeutic areas where we are really strong in. So rather than putting our fingers into various therapeutic areas, we're picking and choosing those branded generics which really supplement our existing therapeutic areas. So that's where it is.
Right. And on the new launches front, I mean, last call, I think you had given some color that 10 to 12 launches per year is something that you're still looking at. Any sense on if that number stays the same or?
No, it's not 10 to 12. Like I said, once we recast the branded generic story, we would be limited to about 3 or 4 max, okay?
Okay.
And we're not looking at 10. That also, if it feels that, if that suits to our therapeutic strategy, and we are going to be a little more critical in evaluation of our business cases, and we'll think that that's a really, really, what is our benefit to our expanding a therapeutic dominance.
Okay, and any you know, apparent pipeline product that you have in plans to launch in India?
There is actually no pipeline available, Girish, as of now. I mean, we have evaluated it. There is nothing really significant that's available to be launched in India as of now.
Okay, so just clarifying this Eliquis product, has it been launched by Bristol in India or Pfizer is launching it?
So Eliquis is a co-promotional product,
right,
across the world with BMS. And BMS has launched it and we are co-promoting it for them.
So you will...
And we get us some kind of a fee for okay, supporting that.
Okay, but you will not have your own brand, say...
No.
Okay.
So we both promote the common brand in India.
Right.
We have our field force, they have their field force. It's a joint co-marketing arrangement what we have, for which we get whatever the efforts we are doing in terms of cost, we do get a cost plus a markup kind of a fee.
And just clarify, this product has a patent in India?
Yes, it does.
And another product of Pfizer, Zeljanz, it has been... any plans for that to be launched in India?
We're continuing to evaluate, right, whether that product will be launched, and if so, when it will be launched in India. As usual, looking at everything from cost to need to sort of the fit within the portfolio in India.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Girish.
Thank you. Participants, just a reminder, anyone who has a question at this time, you may press star and one. We have the next question from the line of Nitish Chawla from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Congratulations for the good set of numbers. You have seen 9% growth, which is Bicasol and Bandit Generic. And this is due to the efforts of great team in the last two or three quarters. Do you see this kind of growth sustainable going forward?
Okay, so let's break the 9% into two parts. The underlying pharmaceutical growth we recorded is 5%, okay? The 9% is the sales with the animal health business there. And if you take off the branded generics and BBOs, I said 9% top line growth, okay? So, unfortunately, Bicasol and branded generics are part of a core portfolio. So, therefore, when I talk to you, I'll do it with that growth there. Other than BBOs and branded generics, I think our growth numbers are looking pretty good. We are looking at a strong 9 to 10% growth on average for other than these two products there. This is without the recent trade issue. As you know, from October onwards, we are faced with some... Actually, we faced a slowdown a little before October. But from October, it's got a little picked up account of the trade issues there. So I'm not... When I talk to you just now, I'm not talking to you factoring in the trade issue. But other than the trade issue, if I knock off the Bicasol and branded generics, a 9 to 10% growth number is sustainable.
Okay. And what is the Bicasol growth in this quarter?
Because its growth, see, it's very difficult to understand. So I don't want to get into because its growth in the quarter by quarter, because one quarter looks to be a hike and one quarter looks to be a negative. I said that because we have some couple of big schemes during that quarter that swings it out. So The way I would like to look at it is on a long-term basis, once the scheme period stabilizes, a 9 to 12% growth in Vicosil is achievable for us.
Okay, and my next question is from balance sheet. Long-term loans and advances have increased from decreased from 143 crore to 110 crore. What is the reason behind it?
Long-term loans and advances. Oh, that's basically because we got some refund of some office deposits, etc., what we have paid for, and that's the reason we got it back. And we got some tax refunds, etc.
Okay, thanks a lot. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Shalab Agarwal from Franklin Templeton. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen, and congratulations on a good set of numbers. So first on NLEM, as you said, Amlogard impact is close to around 12 to 18 crores, on an annual basis. What is the total, apart from Amlogard, which are other brands which are coming under price control, and what is the total annual impact because of the pricing policy?
Actually, Pfizer Limited, Touchwood, to some extent, is not so much impacted other than Amlogard to a large extent, okay? And other products are very, very, very small. The only other product which is some product called Trolimax, which is antibiotic. Other than that, there is no other significant impact.
So the maximum impact is on an annual basis is broadly close to around 20 odd crores. Would that be a good number?
Yeah.
And are there any products where we have got a where we have the ability to take a price increase which have come out of the pricing control?
There's one product that because I can take a price increase. We are evaluating that and we are working on that.
Okay. And especially like Bicosus, we were earlier discussing in terms of the volume growth. It's been a little, erratic in terms of, depending upon which quarter we had a scheme running. Underlying what's the issue with Bicosus? Is it like, a lot of other companies have such vitamins and minerals, which is why, we are facing a tough time, or some changes on the field force, which has resulted into disruption, or is there any other underlying issue with Bicosols?
No. Okay. Let me try and take that. There really isn't. In fact, if anything, we think Bicosols, as we sort of stabilize these market conditions, as Sridhar indicated earlier, is actually, we believe, is going to show good growth over a period of time, somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 to 10%. I think the model that had been deployed for a period of time was to put out some pretty large schemes in the quarter and then sort of deplete that stock over the next quarter. As we've looked at that and analyzed that, we don't think that's a very smart move going forward. So what we've been trying to do is actually stabilize it and make sure that our schemes are not just about building up stock at the trade level, but actually making sure that they get out to the retail and, most importantly, out to the consumer level. And I think as we put those plans into play, we are starting to see that happen, and our stocks actually get stabilized in terms of how much is available at the various segments of the market. So we really don't think that there is any underlying concern associated with it. It's just that there was a particular model that has historically been followed, and we're trying to sort of take a slightly different approach that makes our sales a little bit more predictable for us.
So that's one. The second part of it is that most of you have seen in the metros and tier ones, the multivitamins had taken is growing there. And because the core strength is the brand, and there's a huge amount of prescription coming through in the tier 2 to tier 3 markets there. With the formation of the trade team, what has really helped us is suddenly from a 100-odd field force, we have little more than people promoting it into little more hinterlands of tier 2 and tier 3 and focusing more on the trade and getting that prescription pie also. So the like Jazz said, the combination of our operating strategy in terms of both the number of field force promoting, whom we should promote to, and how we should promote to is actually what is helping us to, you know, get this back.
So is it fair to assume that our decision to whether take a price increase or not will coincide with, you know, this volumes getting stabilized in the market, over the next, 1 or 2 quarters?
No, not at all. I think they're independent decisions. It's something that we're just working our way through.
Sure. And so if you can also touch upon, you did mention there were some changes which we have done in the field force.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously one is the reduction in the numbers, but what else, changes which we have done, if you can, elaborate on that, that will be helpful.
Yeah, sure. We'd gone through it, but let me sort of try and summarize it quickly. What we've basically done is the historical model at Pfizer really had been the field forces were set up almost as they were acquired over various companies. And what we consciously decided to do was take a look at that, and what we found was that it not only had overlapping in terms of the healthcare providers we were calling on, but also in terms of the products that we were actually detailing. And we found that the field force was probably not as focused as it could have been. So in April of this year, we basically restructured it and made it a therapeutic area-based model. And as part of that model, it wasn't just about reducing the field force. In fact, that's not where we started with it. But we said is as we focused on a particular therapeutic area, then really who were the people we wanted to call on? If so, with what frequency? Which as an end state related, translated into sort of the number of reps that we landed up needing. So it was the end of the calculation that led to our decision, but it started with who we really needed to call on and how often, with a very focused portfolio. And I think it's that focused portfolio and that particular model that we believe is really paying off dividend in terms of the growth that we are starting to see in our big products, really, which is what I've been absent last year.
So just trying to understand this better. So currently, our field force is also, categorized into various divisions, calling on different doctors?
Yeah, they are. So while we may have some overlap of doctors, especially at the GP level, what they're doing, though, is that they're calling on with a particular therapeutic area focus. So there might be a respiratory team that is really just carrying a respiratory portfolio, a cardiovascular team that might be called, that would just have a CV portfolio, et cetera, right? That allows us then within that therapeutic area to decide how much we're going to go for what set of doctors, whether we're going to become a little bit more specialty focused depending on what's available to us, or we're going to, have a certain segment that is going to be more generalist focused. But it doesn't obviously prevent us from calling on the same doctor twice, but it won't be for the same product.
And our bigger brands, are they marketed by a separate division, or they are also spread across division depending upon the therapeutic areas they are into?
So typically they're spread out by therapeutic area. The one exception is what we call our trade RX team. And our trade RX team really has three of our really, really big brands which have a significant amount of name recognition, that being Bicosols, Corex, and Gelosil. So those, even though typically they might not have been in a single therapeutic area model, given sort of the weight and recognition of these brands and the fact that we've got to focus not only on the healthcare professionals, but we also have to focus on the trade side of it associated with these products, those brands, in essence, are part of a trade team. But everything else, a Magnex or a Dolonex, are all associated with a therapeutic area team.
Sure. So is it fair to assume that, this quarter we have seen a good amount of benefit from this rationalization and, you know, restructuring exercise, especially on the field force that we have taken?
I think we have on both sides, right? Obviously, you've seen it on the cost side of the equation, but again, that's not necessarily what we were chasing. While it's certainly good, we've seen it in terms of traction with our products themselves.
Sure.
Right? Now, the challenge, as Sridhar has mentioned earlier, though, is given some of the trade challenges, is to make sure that it's not the market conditions that create an issue.
Sure. And so just lastly, how many reps now you have, and you know, what is the plan on that going forward?
So currently on the end-to-end Pfizer books, there would be about 1,800 people, of which there would be some amount of people supporting the Wyatt portfolio and the balancing portion of it, the Pfizer portfolio.
Okay. And are products also marketed by Wyatt?
No. So we have a dedicated team promoting the Wyatt products there.
Okay.
And there are very few products which are actually cross-promoted by either of the teams there.
Okay. So this 1,800 broad number is expected to be broadly similar next couple of quarters, or?
Yeah, we expect it to be broadly similar.
Great, sir. Thank you. Thank you for taking my questions, and all the very best to you.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Nikhil Upadhyay from Securities Investment Management Private Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, sir, and congrats on a good set of numbers. And thanks for the opportunity, sir. Sir, first question is basically taking it forward from the last two quarters con call. You had mentioned that in some of the markets, like in Jellucil and Corex, the market itself was witnessing a bit of a slowdown. Like in Jellucil, you had said, you had mentioned that the market is moving to the PPIs, and in Corex, the codeine issue was impacting the market growth. But now, from the current call, what we understand is that there is some amount of a more confidence in terms of the growth of 9 to 10%. So, is there something, some major changes in the marketplace in these products, or can you just provide some?
Nikhil, very good question, Nikhil. No, the market assumption has not changed. The Corex market or the codeine market still remains uncertain. We still are always in negotiation with the authorities on what should be the regulation around codeine-based selling. There is absolutely no doubt about it. The Jellucil market is also moving towards PPIs. The one big change, like I said, what we have done is we are tapping the potential which we were not tapping earlier. With the forming of the trade team, we are able to go a little earlier. We have completely focused on metros where all these issues were happening. We are going one step below to focusing on tier 1, tier 2, and some other tier 3. We are making sure availability increases. So most of these products are repurchased products. Probably about 80 to 85% are repurchased, and for rest, even probably that is also on a little on the lower side. And what we're trying to do is, since the people ask for Jellucil and Corex by the name, we were not focusing so much on availability in quite a few interior markets, focusing more ourselves on metros. Now, with this formation of trade team, we're actually able to make sure each of these products are available on the shelf. So therefore, it's not a substitution happening, but our products being available there. And that has made a difference. And the number of field force promoting, for example, Jellucil is promoted by around, say, 200 set of people, at Corex promoted by some people. They were attacking it different fashions. Now, with the combined field force, is actually helping us to target and reach even better men. So, therefore, it's purely a tactical approach to marketing and sales promotion is actually helping us. Having said that, there our issues of antacids getting into PPIs and Corex and coding continues even today, no doubt about it.
So, taking into light of these two factors, one is like increasing the availability, and second is the market factors. So, looking at it over 2-3 years, you are still confident that 9 to 10% of a product in our top three, 9 to 10% growth in our top three products is possible, even with the market conditions being adverse.
So we are not stopping at Jellucil per se. Like I said, our branded generic strategy is now slightly changed. They're looking at supporting the Jellucil mother brand with other extensions. So if market is moving towards APIs, we are also trying to use Jellucil or use China or Jellucil umbrella brand to get into those PPIs. So we're not getting into PPIs or not getting into. So we're also looking at line extensions there. So I cannot say that for Corex for sure, but at least for some of our other key products, like because it's all Corex, a line extension is a critical strategy going forward. So that should help us to, you know, maintain a little ahead of the curve there.
Okay. So just one question, because we'll, like you had mentioned that we are moving the mother brand Vicosol into multivitamins and those line extensions. I know it would be really very early to ask, but how has been the growth in the multivitamins lines of Vicosol or the new line extensions where we've launched the product, how the market has reacted to those?
See, we haven't really gotten to launching of Vicosol's line extension still now. We are still evaluating, etc. What we have tried to do is launch multivitamins in using sort of a Vicosol's name, like Beko Special or Bekone GX. Or we try to get into cardio multivitamins there. Now, these are all in the branded generic space there. It's not into the Vicosol space as of now.
Okay.
Whatever multivitamins you have launched till now, for the kind of resources they're putting in, I think we have done a reasonably good job in multivitamin space there. So therefore, it gives us a confidence that if I were to actually leverage the Vicosol's name, probably we could do a little better than what we're doing now.
Okay. Secondly, sir, like on the branded value offerings, now, as you mentioned earlier in the call, that now we would be focusing on some of the largest 10-12 products as a segment.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, if we see our revenue is highly consolidated by around five or six products.
Yeah.
But over the years, over next 2 to 3 years, as we focus more on the branded value offerings, how do you see the size of those products? Like, from a current 8 to 10 crores, what would be the size you would be looking at those 10-12 top products?
Well, like what we said, we are going to use this branded generics as a support to our main brand strategy. They are not going to be the main brands. So therefore, our dependence on the top 5 to 6 products is continuing to stay for some time. And hence, in the last 2 quarters, you have seen a strategic change to approach the market. We feel that we haven't fully, even some of those brand names are probably household names, much older than most of us around here. But there still is a good potential to tap those markets there. So we're going to use these branded generics as more support to the main brand. And more importantly, we're using this as a entry point or a consolidation point in metros and tier one, where the market is changing towards a newer form of medication. So we want to go to the doctor in metros and say, okay, these are the other options available to you. Whereas you go to tier two or tier three, we're able to probably leverage because there's going to be a marriage of both rather than seeing independently. Having said that they won't be a big bang top 4 products in the next few years now.
Okay. And last question, sir, on the Medreps. Currently, as you said, we have around 1,800 Medreps. Can you give a division between the Wyeth Medreps and the Pfizer Medreps, like in terms of the number of Medreps promoting Wyeth product and the Pfizer product independently?
So you could say roughly about 600 people promoting the Wyeth portfolio, 600 to 700 people. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot, sir. That's all.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Jinal Sheth from MultiAct. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Just wanted to ask, was hearing a lot of trade-related issues with a lot of multinational companies post the pharma policy. So I don't know if you, both your companies witnessed the same, and have we seen any stability in the recent times?
So I'll talk of Pfizer in this call here. We didn't witness it to a large extent till the September quarter. So September quarter has passed off fairly well. In October, yes, we have seen a slowdown impacting us. We are trying to find a solution to this impasse with talking to the regulatory authorities on this. We are hopeful of finding a solution. So October has been an impactful month. We are hoping to resolve it fairly quickly.
Okay, so just trying to understand a bit out here. I know this is not a Wyatt call, but what exactly could this problem be in the trade channel in regards to, is it a general problem where it's a common problem for a Pfizer, Wyatt, or there are specific problems?
No, it's a general problem. Post the new pricing policy, the margin to the retailers and stockists has come down. The new policy mandates a 16% margin to the retailers. Erstwhile, for those same set of products, it was 20%. And the method of calculation which the new policy mandates actually does not leave them with 16% in the hand. It actually leaves them with less than 16%. Therefore, they feel that their margins are getting eroded. And hence, they are asking the companies to a full back compensation of full 10 and 20 as in earlier. So that's the debate. It's not just a company like Pfizer or Wyatt. It's an industry issue.
So then, and how is it progressing? Where they are they going to be the ones to win this fight? Or, because ideally pharma companies have been hurt. So is it that why shouldn't they be impacted as well? Ideally, they are the trade.
I think as distinct in the past issues there, I think the impact on companies varies as per the new pricing policy. No two companies are impacted equally. So therefore, companies like us who are impacted to a significant large extent are really, really negotiating hard and saying there is an impact on us. Therefore, getting a further impact is challenging. So I think as also distinct in the past, if such kind of issues came in, things got resolved fairly quickly. But the fact that the things haven't resolved so easily is basically because we're also leveraging the government machinery and saying, going back to the government and saying, guys, this is your policy. We have made earnest attempt to implement new pricing policy. We have gone through lots of impact on it. Some of them expected, quite a few of them not expected, but we still have gone ahead and implemented it out. We look forward to support to make this happen. So we have taken it to the next level there. How this pans out, I don't know. But currently, we are still in fairly good discussions with all three of us involved.
Okay, great. This last question is, post the pharma policy, are you seeing that across your product lines or even in the other company where if the prices have come down, we have seen some pickup in volumes?
We are seeing it. But it's too early. It's just about not even one quarter because it got announced in various spaces there. It's still early, but definitely that's one of our tom-tomming activities in the market because some of the brands are pretty well recognized, well known, and therefore, if I can get a higher prescription or more prescription, the lower price, so be it. So that's what our effort is.
Great, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Nitin Agarwal from IDFC Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. On this issue of the trade margins, have the sales in second quarter been impacted by that? Or it's not been too much of an impact for us as far as the Q2 is concerned?
Not so much in second quarter.
Okay. Because I think in most of the cases, the sales got impacted. I mean, Q2 was where most of the people have taken the hit as on the trade margins issue.
Well, like I said, it varies from company to company, guys. And it's not been a very standard. It's not been a very standard thing there. It's each company's negotiation levels as association. So it has been varied, and we have seen an impact in October.
Oh, got it. And on Becosuls, what proportion would Becosuls be as a proportion of pharmaceutical portfolio?
So roughly we do about, on an annualized basis, about 150 crores.
Okay.
So you can calculate that accordingly.
So, I mean, if I were to crudely sort of put it, it's about 150-odd crores of our sales have, in some sense, come out of price control. Another 20 incrementally has gone into it. Is that a fair way to look at it?
No, because it's currently continuously been price control. We are not taken out of price control.
It's not been taken out of price control.
No.
So when you're talking about the price hike, it's only with respect to the inflation-linked price hikes you're allowed on those price control products.
Yeah, but because we haven't touched it as of now, we're still evaluating it.
Okay, but still, it's not out of the price control per se.
We don't know as of now. We're still evaluating because the government is not very clear on the policies. We are talking to them.
Okay.
There are certain gaps in the current policies which makes it iffy. Iffy.
Okay.
So we are in negotiation with them, talking to them because we don't want to do certain things which is which will really hurt us back later on. So we want to be very, very clear that we are on the right track. So we are in touch with the government on this.
Got it. Got it. Thanks. And secondly, on you know, on this this larger issue of you know, you got the MNC firms in India, they've adopted the you know the OPPI code of conduct. You know, as far as promotions are concerned. So is that? I mean, from a macro perspective, how much of a constraint is really becoming for you guys in terms of marketing your products, given you know the aggression which the domestic companies show as far as marketing is concerned?
I don't know if you want to look at it as constraint, right? Do I believe that it's an uneven playing field? Absolutely. I think it is a very uneven playing field. But I think we believe that the way we are marketing our products and the approach that we've adopted is the right way to continue to build trust with society at large, right? So the idea behind it being that if you're going to base this on a science-based selling model, It ensures that doctors are being well informed about where or how they should be prescribing our products, and the patients are getting the benefit of that. And we're not seeing anything that is iffy.
Okay, but has that sort of you know made things a tad difficult, at least from a practical perspective in the short term? You know,
hey, this is not a short term issue. I mean, this policy has actually been out for a period of time. And we've been following sort of an ethical marketing practice forever.
Okay, but overall, do you see overall standards for the industry as large, sort of getting you know things getting a little more towards the ethical side in general for the industry per se, or that is a little too much to ask for as things are today?
I think it'd be tough for me to comment on the industry as a whole, right, Nathan? I mean, what I can certainly do is continue to reiterate, right, that at Pfizer, we follow and believe that that's the right way to go to market, right? And we think, at the end of the day, society benefits, doctors benefit, and most importantly, patients benefit.
And lastly, on the, you know, when you look at the business, you know, we talked about three or four large products that we have. And, you know, so when you take a 3 to 5 year view of the business, what exactly, I mean, what do you think is going to drive growth for us? I mean, what essentially is going to take us to the next 3 to 5 to 10 years from here on?
I think it's multiple factors, right, Nathan? I think fundamentally, if you look at it, the Indian market, with the certain exception of this year and the exception of the last 6 months, is a growing market, and it's a growing market just because there's a greater and greater population that gets into the phase where they can not only afford, but then they are demanding good medicine, right? So I think just one is just the simple fact that the market grows, and if you're participating in the market, you're going to grow. Now, that's if you're being completely passive. Now, on our end, of course, we're not planning to be passive. I think as Sridhar was talking about earlier, and we've mentioned in earlier calls, we decided to take a fundamental relook strategically as to how the company's performance has gone related to our big brands versus the large number of branded generics that we were introducing, and we thought we might have gotten the proportion a little bit wrong. So what we've basically decided is that we're taking our big brands and putting our focus back on them, and we're certainly starting to see the traction, as are you, on some of these products. But at the same time, we're not abandoning the branded generic strategy. What we're doing is we're taking the ones that are successful, continuing to promote them, and then adding line extensions or being much more selective about our additions to meet the change in prescribing habits of doctors. So I think that's, at the end of the day, the combination of the two is what I think is going to drive growth.
But are you still evaluating incremental branded generic launches, or
absolutely. I think what we've tried to nuance, right, is where earlier we were chasing a large volume of launches,
right.
We are just becoming a lot more selective about them, right? We are looking at them more in terms of fit to our portfolio versus our ability to simply get access to them.
And in terms of the funnel from the parent, I mean, how do you see that really playing out over the next 2 to 3 to 4 years? Do you see a much relevant number of products really coming through from that, from the part of the business?
I think it'll depend on a whole host of factors, right? It'll depend on, obviously, first and foremost, sort of the fit within the Indian market itself. From an affordability standpoint, from a sort of prescribing habit standpoint. And then, of course, on an ongoing basis, what we have to continue to look at is how the IP climate in India continues to be. If it continues to be extraordinarily shaky, that will certainly add to our concern.
Okay, and lastly, the cash that we have on the books, and when we sort of mentioned that you're going to use it for business growth, I mean, what kind of thoughts that sort of you have in mind? Because clearly, we probably do not need so much cash to really push the current set of products.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that leave us with respect to utilization of this cash?
Yeah, I think, Nitin, we continue to evaluate it, right? I think what you're talking about is certainly the case. We just continue to evaluate what would be the best way for us to use that cash.
But inorganic growth opportunities, is that a relevant growth? I mean, is that something that you see is there opportunities out there in this market to really use that cash to use inorganic growth?
I mean, realistically, if you look at all the multiples that are out there, right, in terms of what is being demanded out there, I think they are pretty high at this stage. So I think we're taking all of those factors into consideration as we're looking to see what would be the best way for us to use it.
Okay, great. Thanks a ton, guys. Thanks and best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Chirag Dagli from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, so thank you for taking my question, sir. What will be the component of the other income that we have, 34.5 crores? What will be the interest component out of this?
Major chunk is interest, nothing other than that.
Sorry?
Major chunk is bank interest.
Okay. Sir, if I were to try and see the 1,432 odd crores that we had on the book end of March 13, mm-hmm. and try and, see the yield, it's almost coming to 2.4%. Is this the kind of number that we must, look at in the future, or there is some element of bunching up here?
So, I own on average about 8 to 8.5% pre-tax interest rate. Okay. Currently.
8.5% is what we should try and...
That's what I'm earning currently across various banks, pre-tax.
Okay. Fair point. And the other bit is, sir, you said because we were doing annual sales about 150 odd crores. This is at the company level or at the retail level?
At the company level.
Company level. And, sir, similarly, would you have a number for Codex as well?
Codex is about 200.
About 200 odd crores. Okay. And, sir, lastly, on the trade issues, the fact that our competitors faced some trade issues, did that help us in any manner through the quarter? I mean, I know this is difficult to quantify, but just...
I'm sorry. Did it help us
because
they were facing the challenge? No. Chirag, realistically, I doubt we'd ever be able to quantify something like that. But I would doubt it.
Okay, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Ashish Thakur from Asian Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question. I have one question, like regarding the government of India, which is now proposing tougher compensation norms for the clinical trials. And since we have some 5 to 10% of the revenues coming from clinical trials, so any comments on the same?
We actually don't have revenue that is coming from clinical trials is actually going down as Pfizer Inc. sort of start sourcing that on a more global basis. So I don't think for us, per se, that's going to be an impact.
And also, traditionally, the model was we only playing a risk-free agent here. So all the risks were associated with the Inc. not a listed entity level.
Yeah, but at the general industry level, would you like to give any comment?
I mean, you know, Ashish, it's probably unfortunately a longer conversation than what we could probably have over here. But realistically, if you look at it, right, if the goal is to protect the patients in India, I think that's a very, very worthy goal. You've just got to make sure that the clinical trials that are being conducted and all the associated rules are sort of in line with what is globally accepted. As long as you keep them within that framework, I think you'll continue to have a very healthy and robust environment in India that lands up benefiting the Indian patients. But if the regulation or the approach or the process just makes it difficult or impossible to conduct trials in India, then the impact on that, unfortunately, is going to be felt locally. It's not going to be felt globally.
Okay. Fair enough. Thanks from my side. That's all.
Thanks, Ashish.
Thank you. Participants, that was the last question. I now hand the floor back to Mr. Ejaz Tobakowala for closing comments. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, and guys, thank you for the for attending and for your questions. Certainly appreciate it. I mean, from our perspective, I think, you know, the way I'd like to wrap it up is the fact that, you know, it's good on our end to see the traction that we're seeing on some of our large products, which we think is a function of both the fact that we recognize that we'd maybe taken our eye off those for a little while and we've gone back to them, but most importantly also as a result of us sort of reconstructing ourselves into this therapeutic area model and the trade RX side. I think as we continue to follow through on that, we believe we'll continue to get, you know, the traction that we've gotten so far. Our one point of concern, that's not just ours, but I think it's an industry-wide concern, remains the challenges associated with the environment and the trade. And some of the numbers that you all have already seen coming from both IMS and AIOCD that are showing a sharp, sharp decline in growth. We certainly hope that on behalf of the patients that need these medicines, that these issues get resolved very quickly and the marketplace can sort of get back to being the place it was. So once again, thank you all for attending, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Pfizer, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.